The Around the NFL Podcast plays the Game of Thrones.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Mark, welcome back, baby.
Good to be here, mostly.
Why mostly?
Wow. I'm just trying to turn this week into a sort of a second week of vacation.
You mean a third?
No, I'm just saying second in a row.
Oh.
And, you know, I also thought about the accusations that were thrown at me before, and I'll take as much vacation as I want. And I actually have a lot more days stored up. I may just take them all. See you on September 5th or 8th, wherever it is.
On that point, have you heard back from any of your sparrows?
I did. I'm impressed. I did not. There was no heat-seeking negativity from you guys, from what I know about.
Unless your sparrows let you down.
They could be lying to me.
Wes, were there?
I don't know of any. What went on in your little sojourn to the East Coast?
It's too long to tell.
Oh, come on.
It was great. Got in a rental car, drove to like four or five states, saw tons of old friends, and did not think about the workplace for one second the entire time.
I had to ask Mark this morning at the commissary, dance with the devil at all?
Translate.
What does that
everyone.
Even mean, dance with the devil?
It can mean a lot of things.
No, I did not. I think I was pretty well behaved, actually. Almost stunned by my behavior.
Speaking of,
you have issues.
Well, you had to drive a lot.
You have issues.
I think that was
part
of the issue. You kept having to cross state lines.
I kept a lid on it for the most part.
Yeah.
Speaking of the money tag, though, Mark, I know we were all souring on Game of Thrones at the beginning of this season. You got to stick with it till the finale because the last two episodes made up for putting me to sleep for 2 months.
I saw the one two weeks ago. Not this. It was great.
We've tried to. What we're trying to do here at the Around the NFL Podcast is be the only entity or part of the NFL digital experience that does not talk about Game of Thrones. Because you don't have to talk about Game of Thrones. Like a reference in passing like Wes just made, that's fine. But we're not going to have a segment like, who's the real queen of Westeros? Carson Palmer? What? Enough of this nonsense.
It's a good show running, Dan.
Today's show.
Shots fired.
Is a good. It wasn't really. It's just, you know, enough. Solid show. Like it. Pre-show grade. B.
That's it.
Plus.
Ooh.
Oh.
We are going to talk about Patrick Peterson. No, we're not just going to talk about Patrick Peterson. Arguably the best cornerback in football will be in this studio. And we will talk to him about All or Nothing, the new Amazon series, which Handsome Hank, the notorious DOP, has assigned me to write episode recaps of all 8 of the episodes that are dropping at midnight on Friday. So that's my work week for the most part. But I'm enjoying it. As far as assignments go at work, it's better than, you know, taking tolls at the bridge or something.
Well, you must be liking it because you keep on our IM platform, you keep telling us about scenes that stand out. As it sounds like they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I doubt many of the people that your big fan base in your coal town you grew up in are listening to you talk about watching television shows and reviewing them as some sort of backbreaking labor.
Well, I got out, you know, and I think a lot of people from Pearl River they root for me. They say, "Oh, he did it. He got out of the town before it was too late, like me, and I'm just a bum in the bar." I love all those people in Pearl River, but
we can tell.
I'm going.
You'd never
down a different
invite
path.
Them to your house, but you love them.
Absolutely, the town of friendly people was the name of Pearl River, or the nickname, and I'm friendly because of that. Anyway, Patrick Peterson coming in a little bit later today. We're excited about that. Also, one of our favorite games.
What's more likely?
Yes, What's More Likely is back. You know, we waited for Mark to return. To break out or dust off one of the old war horses of the Around the NFL Podcast. We'll talk about, speaking of Mark Sessler, a new long-form banger dropped by the Sizzler.
Yeah.
We will talk about that. Stratomatic, a precursor to fantasy football. Sessler did a deep dive trying to educate them millennials.
Yeah, that was one of the purposes, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually the subheading right now.
Educating dim millennials.
But before that, we got to do some news. We check behind the glass and say hi to the Irishman. What's up, bud?
Nothing much. I, for one, missed Mark at our Thursday night softball game this week. It felt like something was missing from our team when he wasn't there.
Absolutely. Mark is a great onlooker and supporter of the Shield. And I'm glad you brought that up because the Shield, everything coming together now, a 24-1 win over a squad that had beaten us weeks earlier, 23-21. So, Wes, I think we're starting to click and put it all together.
We are clicking, and, you know, the decision to move Irishman to leadoff paid off big time in my book. 5 for 5 with 5 runs scored. Dan keeps a stricter book and credit him for being 3 for 4 with an error.
Well, I actually – I don't know what's going on with Wes's book because walks are not hits. No,
in softball,
I don't care what it is.
I call it avoiding out percentage.
Okay, well, that's a different stat. Okay.
It's a different sport.
Okay, but AOP. I will – what the official scorer did do was give a credit that fourth hit. So you – 4 for – in the game ball, which went to the Irishman.
Wow.
Described the ball 4 for 4, walk, 5 runs scored, leadoff excellence.
I mean, the one thing that about this team, and I was couldn't have been prouder when I saw Lakeisha's tweet basically describing the romping that you dropped on this whoever these people were. I don't even know if they were an actual sports team.
Unsuspecting clown car.
Total clown car. That you could see for spurts that this was going to happen with this team at some point.
Now we just got to close. We got 4 games left. Playoffs are in our hands. If we can win some softball games.
Greg cannot wait for this season to end.
I love that. I like hearing
stories.
When are
you going to come to a game?
I haven't been anti-softball.
Well, yeah, you said you would come to a game.
Yeah, I'll come to a game. Let's make the playoffs.
Okay, you'll come to a playoff game?
Playoff game.
We'll hold you to that. Let's do some news, Irish.
I won't take anything away from Jim McMahon and the offense, but we could probably have done it without him.
There he is, Buddy Ryan, the architect of arguably the best defense in the history of the NFL, the 85 Bears, also the defensive coordinator of the Super Bowl III winning New York Jets, and head coaching stops in various places. Buddy Ryan passed away on Tuesday at the age of 85 years. This was a man, Chris Wessling, that a lot of people loved, a lot of people disliked. But when we talk about Rex Ryan and Rob Ryan, his sons, and their blustery ways, it all came from the old man, Buddy Ryan.
I think the quintessential Buddy Ryan quote is, QBs are overpaid, overrated, pompous bastards, and must be punished. That defines Buddy Ryan's philosophy on football. It might not be true, but it's definitely what you want from a defensive coordinator's outlook.
And you know where the quote came from. It wasn't from a podium. That was literally in his playbook.
The 1993 Houston Oilers playbook. And to me, he was the defense's answer to Bill Walsh in the 1970s and 80s, that he was so radically different from what everyone else was doing and caused the game to change. He basically abolished the two running back offense. His 46 defense with the Bears led to the abolishment of the two running back offense. And it's no coincidence that Joe Gibbs Redskins kind of bedeviled the Bears during that time with their three wide receivers or their two. They had a H-back offense. But to me, his legacy will be that he's the greatest antagonist to quarterbacks in NFL history. Mm. And that includes his own quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his relationship with his own offensive coordinators and offensive players, I think, it's carried on to some degree to Rex especially.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of things have carried on. I mean, his head coaching record, 55-55-1, 0-3 in the postseason. As a head coach, Buddy Ryan is not a legendary figure. But still, there was he was a force of nature as a personality, and that's why he's remembered so well, even if he didn't succeed at the highest level of the position.
Well, in those 90s, late 80s, early 90s, Eagles teams were some of the most fascinating, exciting teams that I can remember. It's the only team, and this is largely because of Randall Cunningham, that I remember rooting for other than the Patriots. Not like they were my team, but I just wanted to watch them. And now over time, as I've read about these teams, like I just think they're one of the most fascinating collection of characters, and Buddy Ryan was the one leading the way there. And then you have Jerome Brown and Reggie White and, of course, Cunningham and Seth Joyner, and just – there was a lot going on there, and I thought Mike Tannier of Bleacher Report now, who grew up in Philadelphia at the time, those teams mean a lot to people who are from Philadelphia. For teams that never won a playoff game, like, that team was just rebellious. Like, to them, to a lot of people growing up, I think, in Philadelphia, that team typified rebellion. So even though they never won a playoff game or came through, it was just like everything that town wanted a team to be.
That team also, and it's all those teams from the 80s that if you didn't win a championship, if you didn't go to the Super Bowl and dominate someone, a lot of those came close type teams are forgotten. And the Eagles, there would be certain Monday night games against the Cowboys or other NFC East type teams where they would drop such a hammer on them, and the Eagles looked so dominant for stretches, a lot of times earlier in the season too. And it wouldn't mesh out. Another thing that reminds me of some of Rex's stuff, but for all the times that I've ripped on Rex and Rob, and for good reason in my book, I do see two sons that absolutely love their father. I think that it's such a carbon copy scenario with the two of them. And I feel for those guys. They were with him to the end and absolutely adored him.
Well, what better way to show your love than to be like your father? They are so much like him. And I'm thinking of the great book Bringing the Heat by Mark Bowden, it's one of the most underrated and one of my favorite books following a team, like that sort of, you know, inside the team. It's about as inside as it gets. I think of that book, and I really recommend, if you're into reading about football, to get that book, Bringing the Heat, Mark Bowden, who's a great writer. It's almost like a prequel to Collision Low Crossers, because a lot of the same sort of offense, defense, antagonism, almost to the point where you're ignoring the offense, and then the quotes that Buddy Ryan has and everything going on and letting his players be players, it's almost like a prequel of everything that ended up happening with the Jets. The first quote that Buddy Ryan has when he gets hired by the Eagles in his introductory press conference is, "Now you've got a winner in town." Talking about himself. I mean, that's
Rex
absolutely.
Ryan.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I do remember my memory, personal memory, is later in his career, and it was the famous Gilbride game. It was January 2nd, week 17, and the Oilers were one of the hottest teams in the league. I think they won 10 in a row to end that season. And the Jets had a win-and-in scenario in week 17 at Houston. Of course, they laid down and lost 24-0. But at the end of the first half, in a game where Buddy Ryan's defense was dominating the opponent, he gets into it with Kevin Gilbride, the offensive coordinator, for his what he called the chuck and duck, I believe, offense, the run-and-shoot offense of the Oilers of that era. And he took a swing at Kevin Gilbride, which was caught on camera. I mean, if that happened today, can you even imagine if an offensive coordinator punched a defense quarter on the sidelines, what would happen in today's media world? But he ended up being out of the door after that season. I'm sure that played a role, and he ended his career with two uneventful seasons in Arizona. But we should double back and just maybe talk a little bit more about the 85 team.
By the way, before you do, after that game, instead of apologizing like coaches would now, he was quoted saying, "Kevin Gilbride will be selling insurance in 2 years."
yeah, there you go. But the 85 Bears, he was, it's believed to be the only defensive coordinator or coordinator of any kind to be carried off the field after a win, a total blowout of the Patriots in Super Bowl 20.
The greatest defense I've ever seen is the 85 Bears, and I would compare them to Mike Tyson in his prime, where the game is over in the first round, and the goal of the 85 Bears and Buddy Ryan's 4-6 defense, named not because of the alignment, but after Doug Plank, the strong safety who would go play at the line of scrimmage, Doug Plank said the 46 basically just means we're going to get to know your backup quarterback today. And that's what they did. They knocked almost every quarterback out of the game.
And that 85 Bears team, for all its Super Bowl shuffle and Jim McMahon, I mean, the defense is the reason they won that Super Bowl. that what they did that year. And at the end of the Americas game, which they were playing down in the office, because obviously Ditka, you know, who inherited Buddy Ryan, and they did not get along, and he did not have control over half his team, basically, and there were all the factions we've mentioned. But Ditka acknowledges at the end, he said, you know, I never went and won another Super Bowl. Buddy Ryan never did. Had we stuck together, what could happen? And Bears fans still to this day have to wonder, could we have won another two maybe? Because there were teams that were 14-2 coming out of Chicago that couldn't close it in the playoffs. Buddy Ryan with Ditka for another 2 or 3 years could have been very interesting.
I think we have some audio from Ditka there.
How many Super Bowls did I win after Buddy left? Now, how many did he win after he left me? None. So maybe we were better together than we were apart.
They hated each other, too. They were famous for squabbling, and to the point where it was in Ditka's contract, or it was his contract language, where he wasn't allowed to fire Buddy Ryan. Buddy Ryan would throw erasers at Ditka when he would come into defensive team meetings. I mean, this is stuff. And, you know, Mark, you get on Rex and Robin. A lot of people do. We probably would have had similar feelings about Buddy Ryan if we were covering the football back then. But now you look back, and he just seems like this iconoclast and this amazing character. But, man, what a career.
And don't you think by the end of his career, though, people were starting to tire of the Buddy Ryan experience?
The Arizona tenure was –
forgettable.
The whole thing was kind of like the first year has been in Buffalo for Rex. I mean, it was not a pleasant experience for anyone in that organization. But you said it. I mean, what a career in terms of spanning that he was the defensive line coach in Super Bowl III to this greatest defense. And when we build up coordinators now as these defensive masterminds, and Chris said it, like, I don't think there just hadn't been coordinators that much before Buddy Ryan. I mean, there were some that they became the stars in terms of their game plan on defense. There wasn't that thought that the defense could be that aggressive, where the defense could control the game, and he was a big part of doing that.
One short Cliff's Notes history lesson to kind of put a bow on this. George Halas, former owner and coach of the Bears, created the T-formation offense, which took the quarterback to a position where he's a passer. It wasn't always like that. And through the 40s, 50s, and 60s, Joe Namath comes in as the first $400,000 quarterback. By the time Buddy Ryan comes in, which is right around that time, quarterback is elevated to this fine piece of offense machinery, the most valuable player on the field. And Buddy Ryan's whole philosophy was, if he's that valuable, I'm taking him out of the game.
There you go. Buddy Ryan, dead at the age of 85. All right, guys, moving on. And Mark comes back from vacation, and what drops on society?
A hammer,
this long form that Mark had been writing and working on for weeks and weeks, perhaps months.
Weeks and weeks.
Yeah. And we even, Mark, you and I shot a video. Stratomatic is a board game that goes back decades and decades. And it was a precursor to the fantasy football industry, which now we know is the biggest thing in the world. But before any of that happened, Mark, there was Stratomatic. You have a long form article up, which we all implore you to check out, www.nfl.com/Stratomatic, vanity URL, baby. Tell us a little bit about this project, Mark.
I came up with the idea because I had played the board game as like in seventh or eighth grade when, you know, I don't have a car. Any girl that I knew was dating someone 2 years older than me, and I basically didn't exist to him.
I love that you wrote that in the piece, which is great.
Well, it's true because I was just coming into an out and out right obsession with the NFL and with the Browns, but I live so far away that I couldn't see anything about the Browns. Like, you only get two TV games a year. And in some football magazine, you know, in August you go out and buy all the football magazines back then, there were these ads for this board game. And when I purchased it, I got initially a pile of leaflets about it, and it just made me realize this is everything I want. It's total freedom. I can control like football teams, football players. The board games came soon after, and it was absolutely fascinating because the way it's set up, it was not a video game. It predated Tecmo Bowl and all that for me, that it was about strategy, and it was about actually replaying the teams that you loved, and it recreated realistic results. So you couldn't do things with players that you couldn't do in real life. And it was challenging. It was hard to learn. It was very hard to find other people to play with, but I did. And then soon after, it became a computer game a PC version, a very stripped down game, but it was much easier to play that in terms of it only took about 1/8 of the time. And then my obsession with it just took off. Then you become an adult, you move on, and I thought, well, I wonder if this thing still exists in any form. And it was like last October, November that I found that there's a huge community of mostly aging males that are still playing this computerized version of this game, and it's become all the more complex and intense, and they've been in leagues like you would be in a fantasy football league for 20 years together, and they are absolutely driven by this passion and obsessed. So when I saw that it became this sort of community in itself, I started to research it and thought, this might be something that I would like to write.
Why do you think the community that still plays it, why haven't they moved on to Madden, which, you know, at this stage has advanced to a level where there is real strategy in the play calling? Is there something too Stratomatic where it's seen as more authentic in how to defeat an opponent?
I think it is. I think they are different platforms. I asked that question of the people that I interviewed, and I just think it's completely two different worlds to these people. We're talking, most of the people that play seem to be in a similar demographic age-wise, probably to Wes and I. It probably would be hard to get people about 10 years younger, and they have been doing it. They've made friends, and I think that you have to know every player in the league, and they draft for players that are just becoming good players that they think will become better rated down. All these players have player cards that become better rated in a year or two. Like, the people I talked to knew every single player. They study Roto World all day. So it's a little bit beyond Madden, and certainly beyond fantasy football that focuses, the more simple fantasy football that would focus on just skill position players. It has a lot more going on than that, and it's probably way too much for certain people to handle, but for these guys, it meets their obsession right where they're at.
I think the key word is obsession, and I think man doesn't crave what he already has. It's right. Hard for anyone under the age of 35 to understand how we grew up where there was no internet. Honestly, it's worse than that. You couldn't find any information outside of your local paper.
Nothing.
You couldn't find anything from the other 31 or other 29 NFL teams in the league. You couldn't find anything on NBA in Cincinnati. I would go dumpster diving literally for sporting news. so you could quench that obsession. Yep. I had a paper route just so I could get the sports section of the Cincinnati Post.
I feel like someone needs to Photoshop Wes dumpster diving for sporting news.
I hear you though.
And I think that's the mindset. That's the breeding ground. I remember my brother and I invented a dice game for baseball, which is similar to Stratomatic.
Yeah. I think, and I had never played the game before, and for this video that's actually in the accompanying story by Mark, we played each other for, you know, 20 minutes or whatever, and I clearly don't know any of the specifics and nuances of how the game works, but by the time we finished, I got why people would be into it. Like, it seemed like a game that you could just, you know, hang out on a porch on a summer night and not have any girlfriends and, you know, have a couple drinks and, like, just play this game and take it way too seriously. I could totally see how sports nerds, which, you know, we all are in different ways, could really embrace something like this.
It was franchise mode, essentially, right, of Madden. Not that
yes.
I'm a Madden player, but
yep.
before that happened. And, like, that's – I mean, I didn't know about it as a kid. I wasn't that deep into football that I guess I came across it. I did fantasy baseball at a very young age, called this thing called robot baseball, where you would send in, you know, pick your plays and stuff like that. But this to me, like, if I see this, I know I would have absolutely loved every second of it. And just the strategy that you need to know. You need to know the guards, you need to know plays, you need to know what plays work against what defenses, you need to know how to move players around. Like, it is more than just picking which wide receivers are going to get yards and touchdowns. And I think if you love football, it's a thing that's going to only make you love it more.
Yeah, I bought the updated computer game, and I had this little back house in our yard, and I was going back there trying to just learn how it's so much more complex than the version I played back in the late 80s, and I mean, I'm playing the computer, and it is kicking my butt. I opened up the piece talking about taking the Bengals defense and playing Tom Brady and the Patriots, and they're just rolling up and down the field on me. And when I talk to some of these guys who played for a long time, they're like, oh, you got a lot to learn. Like, I'm happy to sit down and teach you, but you can't just pick. You have to move. You can move players around, move safeties around, and if you don't, you're going to get waxed. And I mean, it was frustrating. I was like pounding the table back there, and my wife Simone is just probably very concerned in general.
Were they taunting
goes beyond Stratomatic.
It's right.
Were they taunting you like, you have much to learn, young man?
No, actually, I honestly, the two of the long-time
fullback draw. What a clown.
No, they were so nice, the people that play this, and their dads, their fathers, they have jobs, they're
single.
Normal guys. They listen to this show. They absorb every bit of football information they can to try to get better at this. It's incredible how much time they put in.
It's a great piece, Mark. Everyone really needs to read it. I know we're not wrapping up or anything, but I just want to say that everyone needs to go check this out. If you like this podcast, you're going to like the piece.
The line that jumped out to me was the thought of taking complete control of the Browns. And it's what Greg said, like franchise mode. I remember my sports obsession started, and we've talked about this. My dad just told me one day, I was talking about the Reds need to trade for a leadoff hitter, and he said, why don't you sit down and find a way where they could trade for Ricky Henderson? And that was, like, to me, the start of, I'm taking control of the Reds now.
Yep.
And I totally get that. It starts an obsession, and I haven't been the same since.
Yes.
Yes, NFL.com/Stratomatic, Sessler High Octane Banger. Make sure you check it out. All right, very special guest here in the studio, a five-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro. That's when you know you're a real stud, first-team All-Pro. Star of the Arizona Cardinals, cornerback Patrick Peterson. Welcome to the Around the NFL podcast, Patrick.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Where do you rank in terms of greatest career achievements being in the studio right now? Top?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the roster you guys brought in here so far.
How about great career achievements arriving here on the team plane,
man,
driven by
flown,
the owner,
right.
Piloted by your owner. Is that a true story? We have a picture we're going to show of the plane. Four of the Cardinals coming in here, and Michael Bidwell, the team president and owner, piloting.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure for the owner to take out the time of the day and fly us up here to the NFL Network. It was a bucket list for sure.
First of all, it's like a move that you would see on Ballers.
Right.
That's, like, second of all, like a few things about this. So it's the Ballers thing, like The Rock would be involved, you would think. And then second of all, like what a man, a masculine man Michael Bidwell is, because he could own a team and fly a plane. Third of all, are you in a tough spot, Patrick, there? Because,
yeah.
Listen, oh, it's cool that the owner's flying the plane, but, you know, can he really fly a plane? Like, what are you going to say? You know, he's your boss.
You can't say no.
You know, I kind of fell on his reference when he said, I've only been flying since I was 18 years old, so I kind of felt at ease.
Okay.
So if he would have been like, I've only been flying since, you know, like 2012, but, you know, would you be?
that's 4 years.
Well, he better be confident in it, because he's got you, he's got Calais Campbell, he's got David Johnson
in
the plane.
And he's in there as well, so.
Okay.
That's the most, yes. Okay, let's get into this. All or Nothing. It's debuting on Amazon Prime on July 1st, a multi-part miniseries, documentary, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, Patrick obviously has a big part in this, as it's documenting the entire season. Like, my dream for years was a show that was, you took the Hard Knocks model and drew it out over an entire season.
Right.
But your coach, Bruce Arians, said that he doesn't like Hard Knocks. He thinks it's too much, like, playing up for the cameras and getting into the roster cuts, mm-hmm. and like a soap opera. But this is a different thing. How is this different from Hard Knocks, if you've watched that show before?
I have watched Hard Knocks before, but, you know, over the last couple of years, I kind of fell away from it, because it always comes out, you know, in the middle of camp. And I'm not a very good guy or tech savvy of recording and going back home and watching them.
Right.
So. But this is different, because obviously, it's, like you said, it's through the course of a season, and at times you kind of forget that those cameras are there, and it was real, genuine emotions. You can see the humor of the football team, you know, the character that we had, you know, the adversities that we had to go through, you know, practicing in West Virginia, getting ready for the Pittsburgh Steelers, the ups and downs of games. It's just, I think it was a brilliant idea, and like you said, that was something I always wanted to see too. How is it, like, what these teams do Monday through Sunday to get ready for a game? How they travel? And it's a definitely a great look for the NFL fans.
It's unprecedented. Like, there's never been a team that was documented all season long. Was there ever a time during the season when there was some adversity, or if maybe you had a bad game? Not that you have bad games, but where you were like,
easy there, Dan.
Damn, get these cameras out of my face. We're trying to do something here.
Like I said, it was times that we didn't feel, or it wasn't a sense of urgency that the cameras were around us. You know, so it was
right.
It was always real because, you know, they had so many hidden cameras, so that we kind of felt at ease because, you know, you wasn't always in front of a camera, you know, 24/7 of that day. But it was a pretty cool project.
Big brother watching, though. See, that would spook me a little bit.
I think we have a clip of you, actually, from the show, right, wanted to take a look at. Some of you and your boys, let's take a look.
Well, what these guys are talking about is my Rolls Royce. I drove it every day to work last year.
It's my work car. It was a Rolls Royce. It's a humble flashy, but he the flashiest.
You know you tight when you can talk about each other and you still cool.
A Rolls Royce. What's the move with the Rolls Royce? Is that sending a message when you pull it up?
What is humble flashy?
That's a better question.
That's what I want to know.
I don't know. That's the first time I ever heard that. But I guess humble flashy is, from Gerard point of view, I probably have to say without the rims, still pulling up in like in sportswear, in a suit and tie and all that stuff. So
also it's like, I think I get it because that's a classy car. That is almost like the classiest car in the world. So I'm sure there are guys that pull up in the Lamborghinis and the Ferraris, and that's not humble flashy. That's just flashy. That makes sense.
You're kind of humble flashy right now. You know, you're gonna be on television today and here, but you're just nice, but you're not like
over the top.
Yeah, you're not pointing it out that you make way more money than all of us.
Patrick, your Cardinals were the most fun team in the league to watch last year. Whenever I went to Game Pass, first game I pull up is the Cardinals on Sunday night. And part of that is because you and Tyrann Mathieu, it's rare that you have two Defensive Player of the Year candidates on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of you is more valuable?
Wow. Wes drops a bomb in a big spot.
I thought this was about the Olive. No, we're talking about who's more valuable. That's a tough question because, both of us mean so much for the defense. You know, if it's not me going on the team's opposing number one receiver, it's not him putting him in different situations as far as blitzing, covering that number two slot or that number two threat on the opposing team as well. But, you know, both of us, we're a great asset to the team, and we want to continue doing our parts to the best of our ability to hopefully get us over the top one day.
What does he do that kind of makes you say wow, you know, when he came on the team? Like, what does he do that you this guy's a little different,
right? And you know, playing with him in college, so I kind of saw those flashes. But when he got into the NFL and to this stage and on this level, his ability to blitz, his ability to do a great job of maneuvering his body in the perfect position for some strange hot reason, and the way he's able to turn and flip his hips as quickly as he is, and his ball skills, I believe. His ball skills are probably one of the best in the league, I'm sure.
And finally, before we let you go, Patrick, you know, you're very good with Twitter beefs. And cornerbacks are always beefing, and you know the people. We love the cornerback beefing. You and Richard Sherman have gotten after it. You and Josh Norman had some epic battles. When's the next one? I feel like we're a little overdue. It's time. Who's next?
I have no idea. I don't try not to get into the beefs. You know, it's just I think it's all fun.
There is something about the cornerback position, though, that I don't know why. You don't really hear as much like tight end saying, I'm the best tight end. But there is something about cornerbacks. And this started well before you were ever in the league, of the different cornerbacks kind of comparing themselves to each other and saying, no, I'm the best right now. I'm number one. Is there something like about the position that you're inherently competitive with all those other guys?
Probably have to say because, you know, now the NFL is turning into that passing league. So, you know, most teams you have marquee receivers. And, you know, and now this day and age of football, you need to have one or two marquee defensive backs or cornerbacks. And to play my position, you have to be confident. I mean, you always have to carry a certain swag, you know, about yourself. And I think that's what it's all about, just a bunch of great guys, a bunch of great athletes, you know, fighting and jawing for that number one spot.
Plus, you are better than Josh Norman.
We knew that.
There we go.
Fair.
All right. So Patrick Peterson, he's got stuff to do. He's a busy man about time down in Los Angeles. Then he's got to get back on the jet, and you fully trust the owner to get you home. So everything's working out. And it's great to have Patrick Peterson here with us. Again, check him out on All or Nothing on Amazon Prime, and then watch him, of course. The team of around the NFL last year, the Arizona Cardinals, we love watching the Cards, and we look forward to watching you again in 2016.
Oh, man, we're looking forward to putting on another great show as well and getting to the big game and winning it, hopefully.
And there he is, Patrick Peterson. Wes, you really put him on the spot there.
I don't blame him for
that. That's how we treat our guests?
Hey, look, I want some answers, but it's late June. He doesn't want to think about football. I'm fine with that.
That's fair. That's fair.
I like that he was comfortable when I pointed out how much more money he made than all of us.
Some things you just can own and not even feel weird about it. All right, so thank you to Patrick Peterson. Before we go, yes, it's time to play one of our favorite games in the world.
What's More Likely?
Yes, this is a game whereby each of us take turns laying out two different plausible scenarios, and the rest of the group decides which of those options are more likely. Sometimes we put a theme on it. This time, take it anywhere you want. Mark, get us going.
All right. What is more likely? Number one, the football gods finally smile on the Ryan twins. With their beloved father gone, Rex and Rob turn the 2016 Bills into a team that Buddy Ryan would be proud of, a terrorizing Reggie Ragland-led defense to go with an offense led by low-paid, forgotten quarterback Tyrod Taylor. Slow out of the gate, the Bills finally awaken to drop an atomic bomb on Jimmy Garoppolo and the holier-than-thou Patriots in Week 4. From there, Buffalo churns out one white-knuckled victory after the next, setting up a Week 17 rematch with the New York Jets for the AFC's final wildcard spot. Sorry, Dan, but in a New York Day massacre, the Ryans unleash a defense that sacks gangrene naif Christian Hackenberg a whopping 9 times. It's only the start as Buffalo goes on to shred Denver and Pittsburgh before dropping New England 30-3 in the AFC Championship. After beating the Packers in Super Bowl 51, Rex and Rob are both carried off the field a la Bears 85 by their players in what talking heads call the greatest Super Bowl story of all time.
Okay, so not plausible, but go ahead.
That's option A.
Was that the – okay, there's another one?
Yes, okay. That's how this game operates. Or number two, after conquering the world of pro football writing, Chris Wessling trades in his romance with the NFL for his newfound obsession with garden gnomes of all shapes and sizes. Returning to Tybee Island, Wes fills his small seaside bungalow with hundreds upon hundreds of gnome collectibles. A writer at heart, Wes can't help but jump online and become a core contributor to Gnomes We Know, the preeminent online landing spot for gnome knickknacks, fan fiction, and lore. Wes's weekly column, Naughty Gnome or Nice, catches fire inside the subgenre, turning Wes into a folk hero within gnome enthusiast circles.
How do we follow that?
Well, we have to answer the question first.
What's more likely?
That should just end the show. Wes, I'll jump. Oh, you go ahead, Wes. You seem like you want to talk.
I want to see what you guys say. I have an answer.
Well, yeah, it was strange right after Dan says plausible for these two scenarios because Wes loves him some football. He's still that same kid that was playing Stratomatic. He's not giving up the gnomes. I think, you know, this is really a shot at the Bills that these two scenarios would be somehow even, that the Bills winning the Super Bowl would be the same as Wes becoming the proprietor of Gnomes R Us. Is it called? Gnomes R Us?
Gnomes We Know.
It's a long shot at Rex Ryan, essentially. And I'm not going to take that bait. The Bills are much more likely. This is a talented team. It wouldn't be that surprising if they made the playoffs. And once you make the playoffs, you always have a chance. It'd be a surprising Super Bowl team, but I don't think it'd be a surprising playoff team. The Bills are more likely.
I find it amusing, Mark, you continue to conflate What's More Likely with Qualis 2 Fantasia.
I have no idea what either game
they
is.
They are two very different games, but they always end up Qualis 2 Fantasia.
Absolutely true.
Dan, listen with some distaste there.
Not distaste, but, you know, we're playing two different games here. The more likely scenario, though, Wes is not a gnome guy. He's just not a gnome guy.
Well, not yet.
Why do you keep trying to put us out into different careers? You had me writing a tennis blog, me and Wes writing a post-war blog. There's a lot of,
well,
know,
this is also, I said, after he conquered the world of pro football writing. So he had done everything someone could do.
It's time for me to weigh in because you guys are being way too rough on
Mark. Wait, let me answer the question. Right. Wes is not a gnome guy. Wes will do a lot of fun things in his post-football life, but collecting garden accessories is not one of them. So the Bills winning the Super Bowl would probably be more likely, but neither is likely at all or plausible.
Okay.
The answer is B.
Whoa! Wes knows, too. He's got a good inside source.
I don't want to write football the rest of my life. At some point, that's not going to be what my passion is. Mm-hmm. Mm. But I have had a latent greed thumb for over a decade now.
Wow!
Here we go.
If I had my own place, I would be a gardener.
I feel like he's reciting something off his Bumble profile.
Yeah,
right now.
I would be a pretty devoted gardener. I like the idea of working the earth. I like the idea of yielding things that you've put into the ground yourself. I like a self-sustaining economy.
Wow. Save it for farmers only.
Case
I don't
closed.
Know if I could get into the gnomes, but I feel like if you're already gardening, that could become the next level, right?
Sure, I think so too. Case closed.
Wow.
I would go B. I don't think the Bills are winning the Super Bowl, but I could become a gardener.
I'm learning a lot about Wes here.
There is a difference, though, becoming a gardener and becoming a crazy person that collects gnomes.
It's true. It's
That's where I couldn't follow that you would do that.
I'm not particularly attached to gnomes.
I could see you like, the Godfather, Vito Corleone, in the tomato patch with the young grandson one day.
As I'm explaining, naughty gnome or nice?
All right, Wes.
I'm sad you don't want to write football forever.
Yeah.
We grow, Greg. Sad. We grow and change.
Not me. I haven't grown since I was like 12.
Oh. That was sad. All right, you're up, Wes.
What's more likely? Dan's son Jack ultimately abandons the Jets to root for the Rams. Greg's son Walker ultimately abandons football for tennis. Mm.
Well, who knows if he's even on top of it to begin with, but okay.
Or one of Mark's sons, Luke or Colton, abandoned the Browns for the resurrection of the United States space program in the future.
Hmm. Is the space program defunct?
Well, NASA's a shell right now.
It's still.
Yeah, but
you've got
space
companies
up there.
Like SpaceX that are
That's what
really
I'm, you're saying it, still it, would exists. It would be revived. It would become what it was thought as.
Right. You okay. Just offended all of our NASA listeners, but that's fine.
Well, they'd agree.
Wow. I'm going to go, well, it's specific here. I'm going to go with Jack ditching the Jets for the Rams.
Oh, something negative about the Jets.
No. I think
we've hit our limit for the show, or I should say.
I think all three
baseline.
All three are pretty plausible. The NASA thing is so specific that cuz there's no reason for Luke and Colton to be a Browns fan. If they're a Browns, are you going to make them a Browns fan? You live in Los Angeles and you grew up in Connecticut, and the Browns are the Browns.
Yeah, it's that's a fair point, Greg.
So you never know. So I don't think, but I think all of our sons, it's very possible they could be Rams fans if we lived here a long time.
My son will be a Jets fan. I already know he adores me. He's not going to want to let his old man down. And he's going to use it as a bonding exercise.
That's fair. That maybe of the three of us, I think you're going to push your son the most to make sure he's a fan of that team.
The danger.
I'll be like, who you want?
The danger, though, is, and maybe this is why I got to join Wes in the garden, get a green thumb on, is if I'm going to be in some, goddamn newsroom when I'm 44 and not watching the Jets on my couch, and then Jack's left to his own devices and all his buddies are, have their Todd Gurley Hall of Fame speeches ready.
Yep.
Then it gets dangerous.
No, when Luke and Colton were young, I'd come home and on a Sunday night, and they were in San Francisco 49ers pajamas because my wife is a fan of that team. So, the divisiveness
dangerous.
Has already been put into play. And Colton actually asked me yesterday, He said, do you love football? And I think he was seeing it as an either or, like someone can only love one thing. So I said, no, I love you. And I also love space exploration. So I do not think the Jets will lose Jack as a fan. Tennis, that's possible. But Greg is a football man to the end. So I'm actually going to say that I could see Luke and Colton not being a Browns fan and pursuing the space industry. Because it's in line with their current hobbies as is.
I could see them potentially going down a career path together.
Maybe so.
And, you know.
Hopefully lucrative.
Well, I think the spaceman makes some money.
NASA's, they're doing well.
What are you talking
about?
I'm saying that not the company, but if you're working for NASA, those aren't easy jobs to get.
NASA is like a shell organization right now. They are doing very little.
Top level people at NASA, they're making some cash. I think.
Well, they are.
Well, great, entertaining, imaginative work by Kissing Cousins. I never thought I would say this, but I gotta go down to the lab and get my scientist hat on.
Wow.
Let's talk a little football here, guys. Nice down here. A little drafty. What's more likely? Ryan
Phone's
Tannehill.
Ringing.
What's that?
Phone's ringing. In the lab.
I don't know why that phone's always ringing. What's more likely? Ryan Tannehill finally reaches his potential, goes full Dalton, and is a top 12 quarterback in 2016. Or Brock Osweiler lives up to the contract, drops a 4,028.90 slash line. That 90 is his passer rating. And tells his haters.
What is 20? Just 20.
28.
Oh, 28.
Yeah, 4,000 yards, 28 touchdowns, 90 passer. And tells his haters to suck it.
Well, we got to break this down. Living up to it, I think, yeah, those numbers would certainly live up to it. And those aren't crazy numbers. Heck, I think Ryan Tannehill might have had pretty close to those numbers last year. But I am going to say it's more likely that Ryan Tannehill rises to be a top 12 quarterback because, to me, he is a guy who is the product of his surroundings. He's a pretty good quarterback, not a great quarterback, but for a guy that gets criticized a lot, here's what he had last year, 4,200 yards, 24 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, very similar stats the year before. He hasn't been bad, and I like the team around him. I don't love Tannehill at this point, but he's got some skills. I like Gase. I like Landry, Parker, Carew. You know, you throw in Stills and Cameron, and you got an offensive line with Brandon Albert's healthy again. Juwan James is back. You got Laremy Tunsil now to fill in for one of them or play guard. I think the surroundings are better, and so like Kirk Cousins and Dalton last year, I think Tannehill could get pushed up to the point where he's seen as an 11th or 12th, which isn't that far from how people saw him in 2014.
Well, really?
Yeah, by the end
who's
of that,
people?
That by the end of that year, people, if you go look at, I think, the year-end sort of quarterback rankings and QBR and stuff, like, that's the range he was in, was the Eli Manning type of range after that year.
Boosted artificially by a gimmick offense that highlighted his strengths and hid his weaknesses.
But that's how you get credit. And I don't think he's going to suddenly turn into a great player, but he throws with anticipation. That's something I saw when I went back and watched him. I think he's good. He's not great, but I think if he's really supported, he can be really good.
I think the answer is B, because if you start 16 games in today's NFL, you're throwing for 4,000 yards and 28 TDs. But I think Brock Osweiler would have to be a miserable failure not to do that.
When we did this on NFL Now, you did not drop the Osweiler stat line, correct?
No,
I did.
Oh, you did. Okay. Well, I think this is a tight race. I'm going to go Tannehill because one thing I'm not sure about with Miami's offense is their running game at this point, and they may be throwing the ball a lot. But also, you're talking about top 12. If one or two of the people that were in the top 12 last year kind of fade off this season for whatever reason and another one or two get hurt, he could slide right in there. I don't love Ryan Tannehill either, but I do think that Adam Gase has done a good job in each stop he's been at, and it's an upgrade coaching-wise sort of in general for the Dolphins, and we're not asking Tannehill to be something he completely wasn't last season statistically.
Right. I think Philbin and the people he hired could have been among the worst coaching staffs in the entire league. And so you're hoping that Gase and the people he fired are league average, and that's going to help you a lot.
Here's one problem I would see, and, Mark, you mentioned the running game, which is very up in the air last night. right now. You know I'm a Lamar Miller fan. You could, at the very least, Lamar Miller was a very effective back when given the opportunity last season. Sacks by year for Tannehill, which isn't all his fault, but does point to some deficiencies in pocket awareness, etc. 35-58, which led the league, 46-14, 45-15, the most lost yardage on sacks in the league in 2015. If he doesn't have a running game and defenses don't have to honor that, he could. I mean, this could be just a complete butcher show behind.
Their line is better, though. Their line has improved, but I think with all these young quarterbacks, some of those sacks are the quarterback's fault.
You're right. I think Tannehill's biggest problem is he doesn't get rid of the ball quick enough, and he doesn't seem to. What separates the great quarterbacks from the average ones like Tannehill are the ability to process everything quickly and make decisions before the snap. He has not shown that he's great at that part of his game. I think that's fair. But he also has limited mistakes. I did the stats when I did the article. Since he's did the last two seasons, he has thrown the sixth fewest interceptions in the league per throw, and the other people on that list are all Pro Bowlers. They're all the best
quarterbacks in the league. Part of the reason he's eating the ball when he's getting taken down.
Yeah, that's a mistake. It's how you define mistakes. Taking sacks that you shouldn't take is a mistake. Not seeing what you're supposed to be seeing is a mistake. Not pulling the trigger on throws downfield is a mistake.
Pro Football Focus ranks the offensive line. No, they're not perfect. It's not, you know, end all be all. But the Dolphins were and this is, you know, they account for guys holding the ball or not. 32nd in the league in 2014 overall and 31st in the league last year. So he's had some really lousy lines in front of him.
I mean, I even like the potential of Osweiler, but he was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league last year. So it's like
one of the worst. Feels a little strong.
Well,
they didn't give him a lot to do.
I think he's just an unfit. Like, I just don't know what he is.
It's just a lot of question marks.
Yeah, I don't know though. To Wes's point, if he did a 4,000, 28 touchdowns, 90 passer rating, that's good quarter. I know the numbers are inflated now at the position, but that would be the Texans would be doing backflips.
Brian Hoyer had a 91 point something passer rating.
And Hoyer is a completely he's got his issues, but Hoyer came in with more experience at least. I just think with Osweiler, we have to see. Bill O'Brien, I wouldn't have a problem with coming out of next year with people thinking just as highly of Bill O'Brien as they do of Adam Gase, depending on what happens there.
That's a good point. I mean, Gase is a little bit of an unknown too. You don't know if a good coordinator is going to be a good coach.
Well, also, is it better for Ryan Tannehill to have Gase as his offensive coordinator instead of his head coach? Why are we assuming just because the head coach is there, it's going to help Tannehill?
Yeah.
That's fair. All right, Greg.
All right, two teams last year which underperformed maybe more than any teams in the league. Everyone kind of expects the Ravens and the Cowboys will bounce back to some degree because they're talented rosters. But what's more likely? The Ravens don't bounce back at all this year, and by December, we're hearing leaked reports to NFL media insider Ian Rappaport that John Harbaugh's job is not secure, or the Cowboys don't bounce back at all, not going to come close to sniffing the playoffs, and we hear reports that Jason Garrett is going to be let go by the Cowboys at year end. What's more likely?
My first instinct is that John Harbaugh, unless things go really bad. How bad are we talking?
About the same as last year. Although that would be worse because they wouldn't have the rash of injuries.
Okay.
But I'm saying a 4-5 win team for each of these scenarios.
I think that's something he might have to fire some of his assistants, but I think he would be safe, and then it would be a do or die 2017. I see that with John Harbaugh. I think he has enough rope. Jason Garrett, I don't think, is the same situation. I think, especially if, you know, Romo plays more games than he misses, but they still stink despite having, you know, this hotshot running back and this offensive line and all these high-paid players. I think Garrett definitely could go. And, you know, Jarrah has been more than patient with Jason Garrett. I think that if they had a really disappointing season, Jerry Jones, who's getting older, would be compelled to act.
I see the Ravens as a roster that has question marks at every single position except tight end. I could easily see them only winning 4 games. I think the Cowboys are the clear favorites in the NFC East. I'd be shocked if they were, unless another injury to Romo and Dez Bryant, if they were out of the race. That said, I don't think John Harbaugh is in any danger of losing.
Well, I didn't say he's going to get fired, but you're hearing some leaked reports.
If they're a
4-win team, I think you're going to hear some
reports.
But
wouldn't what Wes is saying, wouldn't that make Jason Garrett more susceptible to getting canned if they had a bad year, because he has all these pieces. And if Ozzie Newsome takes a step back and talks with ownership, like, listen, there's not a lot here. He's doing the best he can. I mean, maybe he doesn't have the tools to have a successful team right now.
It's kind of two different questions. Jason Garrett, probably the one more likely to be fired, but the Ravens more likely to finish with a bad record.
You know, one thing about Garrett, when before the playoff year two seasons ago, a lot of people were waiting for Garrett to get axed at one point or another after multiple 500 seasons. You can't get him over the hump. And, you know, Sean Payton's sitting out there, and we know Jerry Jones has a fascination with him. Sean Payton's under lock and key now. And when they talked about Garrett in the past, and I do think it's sincere, they talked about it as someone that since he was started in the league in 1993 that they've put 20-plus years of investment into. And it would have to fall on Jason Garrett's shoulders in terms of he's not – coaching them correctly game after game, almost losing games the way Coughlin did last year in bizarre fashion. If it's not that, I would go with the Ravens. I don't know. It's tough, though, because if the Ravens, the other situation I could see is Ozzie Newsome taking not the heat, but if someone's head needs to roll, that Ozzie Newsome, who is at the end of a proud, long career, could step down at some point and let, what is it, Eric DaCosta come in and maybe take over that operation. I mean, Ozzie Newsome is not young at this point. But you created a good one. I'm going to go more likely with the Ravens because they're more likely to finish 4-12.
Ravens are a proud franchise. You know, Billick won a Super Bowl there. He had some winning years after. He struggled for 2 out of 3 years. But the one in between was the one where they lost with McNair as the one seed, and Billick got canned. So I just think that's a proud franchise, and another bad season would be tough for them to swallow. I don't have an answer, but
Ozzie Newsome, by the way, one of those guys that looks older than he actually is. He's got a lot of age on him, but his last pro season was 1990. He's 60 years old. So
he's been doing this for a very long time. That's all I'd say. I mean,
kind of looks like he's 80.
I think he could do it for another 10 years. I'm not ushering him out the door. It's just that if maybe it fits for someone else to take a step down.
We should do like top five player GM careers. Ozzie's
in that top five.
Ozzie's got to be in that.
Oh, yeah. All right. That was What's More Likely. Good job, guys. A lot of fun. That's it for Tuesday's edition of the Around the NFL podcast. We'll be back with one more show this week before an Irish. I know you're working on it. This is happening, guys. Starting next week. We're rolling out our first ever best of the Around the NFL podcast. Let me get a little bugle for that. How about that? And Irish, you've been doing a lot of work on this, haven't you?
That is correct. A lot.
This is your chance. You're going for Mount Rushmore. You're saying the chisels, they're staying out forever. This is going to be my grand artistic statement.
Well, I hope people look at it that way, yeah.
There's a lot on the line.
I mean, I think he's going to do a great job.
This is almost, this is your Mount Rushmore.
This is it.
Is that what you basically said? I mean, this is the thing you've been chiseling.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's true. It gets a little complicated and confusing, but there's multiple Mount Rushmores at play here.
Especially because it's all your guys' work that I'm just putting together.
Right. Basically what Irish has done, and he referenced our he dove into the subreddit around the NFL podcast, if you want to check that out, and reached out to the audience and also spoke with us about things that we got a lot of positive feedback on, and we're rolling it out.
I heard from someone else in the Blue Room that he's actively bleeped out any comment or reference to the Gold Standard or Sydney.
And TD. All of them gone.
Brandon's gotten feistier as the months have worn on.
All right, so yes, we'll be back on Thursday. Best of starts next week. 2 weeks of best ofs, two episodes, I should say, spread over 2 weeks after this week. So that's a lot of fun stuff to look forward to. Until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm. Welcome back, buddy.
Thank you.
It's good to have you back.
It's good to be here.
The mailman, the boss, and Irish behind the glass. Till Thursday. You're twisted. Your girl's a hoe. You're broke. The kid ain't yours, and everybody know. Your old man say you're stupid. You'd be like, so I love my baby mama. I never let her go.
Yeah, right. You will let her go.